Mormon Stories podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. So, do you feel like Feminist Mormon Housewives has had a net positive impact on people's faith? Do you feel comfortable enough asserting that more people have stayed than have been driven away?
My impression from the kinds of emails I get from people would lead me to believe that. And from, you know, the comments that I get on the blog, I have never, ever received an email from someone who said, you know, I had no problems with the church, and then I read FMH, and now I'm leaving the church. I've never gotten that email.
Right.
You know, I have gotten lots of emails saying I was on my way out. I couldn't figure these things out. I was so upset. I didn't, you know, I couldn't, I felt so alone. I thought I was the only one. I get those emails all the time. I get emails from people saying, you know, I was on my way out of the church and I still left, but I left with a lot less bitterness than I would have left, you know, had I not had FMH. And I've gotten emails saying, you know, I left the church years ago and I might not have left if I'd found FMH before I left. I've gotten emails from people saying, I want to join the church, but I didn't know if I could because I was a feminist, but now I'm going to join. I've gotten emails from people saying, my mind just went blank. Basically, I think it's a net positive. I think I do get emails from people who are very upset that I dare talk about these things, but I've never had any of them follow up saying, you've ruined my testimony.
Right, right.
And maybe that's just not something that someone would say, but, you know, I don't know.
How many people do you think you've reached in total through your blog, and what do you think your regular readership is? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't really have any idea how many total it would be. I know that, you know, it changes over time. Like, people who used to be here don't come very often. It's like, even for me, I, you know, like I said, I would have read and written on the blog 24/7 for probably a year. I would have done nothing else. I wouldn't have eaten or slept. I just was so into it. But then after a while, I feel like I've had all the conversations already, pretty much.
Right.
And I've already talked about all the subjects, and I've resolved a lot of my own questions, and I'm pretty comfortable with where I am right now. And so now a lot of what I do is just sort of, for other people. I do it because I feel like, well, I mean, I still get the accolades and I still like being, you know, I still like people reading my stuff. And so, you know, it's not like all selfless or anything, but I do, for the most part, do it for people that I know that it really helps. And I think sometimes I wish that there was a Dread Pirate Roberts that could come in and be the new FMH Lisa, and I could just retire to a island in the Caribbean. So I have no idea, like, over time, how many people have read FMH. I have no idea. As far as how many people read it every day,
or every month, or, you know, once a month, or once a week, or,
you know, I do have the stats things, and I could open them up right now, but I kind of don't remember that very well. I think it's around right now. Unique visitors every day. So this isn't people who come back and read a second or third time or look at more than one page, but, you know, people who show up entirely unique from, at least from a unique computer. 'Cause, you know, if they check the blog from their, BlackBerry, and then they check it on their computer, it'll show up as two people, even though it's one.
Right.
But, I think we're close to 4,000 a day.
Wow.
Unique readers. We've been kind of hovering at that level for a while. You know, for the first few years, we grew really fast. And the last couple of years, we've just sort of hovered right around 4,000. And sometimes we go up a little, and sometimes we go down a little. you know, depending, like December seems to be kind of low because people are holidaying, and right before, you know, elections, November tends to be pretty, or October, November tends to be a little heavier. But yeah, right around 4,000 unique visitors a
day. Is that the highest it's ever been?
4,000?
Yeah.
No. I mean, there are sometimes, like, during certain conversations or certain things, it's gone up really high. I couldn't tell you exactly how high the highest it's been. I don't remember, but it's been really high. I don't know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, why don't we do this? I think we would be remiss to not have you share some of your feelings about, you know, motherhood and spousehood, just from what you've learned and all your experience talking to women and listening to women and learning about people's experiences. So I know this is a huge broad topic and, you know, you could probably spend hours on it, but, you know, there are a lot of mothers out there. There are a lot of wives out there. There are a lot of husbands and men out there. And any perspectives or impressions or words of wisdom, things you've learned from motherhood that, or from spousehood that you want to share or want to leave with our audience?
You know, one thing I was just thinking about as you were asking that question is I was thinking about the study I just read about how getting married young is, you know, one of the leading signs that you're going to get divorced later.
Yeah.
And also getting married young also is one of the big signs that you're, even if you don't get divorced, that you're going to be more unhappy and have more challenges in your marriage than people who get married older. And I just, as I was reading that study, I was thinking, you know, I it's really curious that the church has such a strong emphasis on getting married, you know, pretty much as soon as you get off your mission, or for girls, you know, choose to get married before you go on your mission, you know, or before a mission, make that choice. That's the more important choice. And, you know, having been married so young myself, you know, I wonder about that emphasis. You know, if we truly value marriage and families, wouldn't it be wiser to change that emphasis, that, you know, get your education first? The thing that makes it difficult, obviously, is, you know, trying to maintain not having sexual relations until you're older. But it seems like it would be more important to create really strong families and really strong marriages, you know, to encourage people to be a little older when they get married, just because statistically speaking, we might have a lot stronger marriages. And just thinking about my own journey in being married to my husband, I think about how, you know, when we first got married, I knew I was sort of entering a bit of a faith crisis, but I didn't know the extent to which it would go. Like, I really just firmly still believed at that point that at some point that, you know, it would all work out, that, you know, it still didn't occur to me that I could ever leave the church at that point. And I think, you know, if I had lost my faith and Niall had been, my husband had been, you know, married to someone entirely different. Well, he is anyway, but, you know, like, you change so much in those years. You're just not formed yet, really. That we, you know, that if you're a little more settled in your faith and your worldview, when you get married, you have a clearer idea of who it is you're married to. And luckily, my husband was just so mellow about all of my faith crises and my political crises and my who am I crises. He was just like, you'll figure it out. And he just loved me through it. And I think it was hard on him, but he never made it hard on me.
What a blessing. Know.
Yeah, he has, I was so lucky. Oh, he's such a good man. I really, really love him. But, I, you know, that maybe that a lot of these marriages that, you know, we do get a lot of people on FMH who, you know, who have these kind of mixed marriages where, you know, one of them believes and another doesn't, or one of them is very orthodox and another has a lot of questions and problems and issues. And I feel like, you know, if we maybe put off marriage a little bit, we might know who we are a little more before we get married. And it might be a little easier for us to stay married as Mormons and maybe be a little happier in our marriages. And the same, I feel the same thing with parenthood. You know, the studies show that older mothers, not older, but, you know, women who become mothers in their late 20s instead of their, you know, early 20s tend to be a little more balanced and have a little more parenting skills and raise children that are a little more healthy. And mostly because the women have already had a chance to sort of be themselves. And I was lucky in that I didn't get pregnant right away. And that was due to some health things with me. But, you know, I very well could have been a mother at 20 or 21. And I'm really glad I wasn't, because had I been going through motherhood and that faith crisis, I don't know what that would have been like, but I'm sure it would have been really bad. But, you know, I was 26 when I had my first child, and I still kind of feel like I wish there were a lot of things I wish I would have done. I wish I would have pursued some more things for myself. But I, you know, wisdom comes with age, or something comes with age anyway. I chose to be a mother. I chose it, completely chose it, my eyes wide open, and it was 100 million gazillion times harder than I thought it would be. I never thought it would be easy, but it was really, really, really hard. And I look back on those times when I had, you know, three kids under the age of four, and they were really dark times for me. I was not a happy person. I was not a well-balanced person. I was kind of a desperate, lonely, scared, depressed, angry person. And I tried not to put that on my kids, you know, and I don't feel like I did. They're really good kids. But inside, I was a complete mess, and I was really unhappy. And, you know, I don't know if that's what every mother experiences, or if there's, you know, if there's something I could have done to make that easier on me. Maybe if I would have worked part-time or had more time, more me time, or I don't know if there was some solution, but obviously I love my children, but they haven't brought me a lot of fulfillment or happiness. Most of that is all for them. They get the fulfillment and the happiness. So, and, you know, there are the happy moments when, you know, they look at you and you just, oh, you look at them and, you know, you throw yourself in front of a bus for them, you know, and you just love them so much. And there are those moments when it's really worth it. But wow, that was, it's much easier now. I'm much happier now that my youngest is 5 years old and they can all talk to me and they can all dress themselves. You know, they don't put their clothes in the hamper, but but, you know, if they're crying, I know why. And if, you know, and I don't have to deal with their bodily fluids on a daily basis.
So what advice would you give a young LDS mother who's dealing with the poop and the vomit and all that stuff? You know, let's say she's just in that same dark place that you were several years back. Hope or encouragement or advice would you give her to hang on and to make it through those hard times?
Well, you know, they're sort of cliched, but often cliches are true because, you know, because they're true. They're cliched because they're true. But, you know, looking back now, I realize, you know, and people always said this, it goes by faster than you think. And it does. You know, when you're in the middle of it, though, that's not always terribly comforting, when you're like, I'm gonna die, and people say, oh, it goes by faster than you think. Okay, right. What do I do about right now?
Yeah,
but yeah, it does go by faster than you think. And I look back on those pictures of my tiny little babies, and I really do feel like in some ways I missed out on enjoying how cute they were, because I was just so pulled down by their diapers. But I don't know how else I could have handled it, because that's just how I was. And I guess also just don't beat up on yourself. You know, just don't expect more from yourself than you can give, and don't worry if you can't be on time to everything, because it really does take hours to get out of the house when you've got to put clothes and shoes and diapers and hats and gloves and coats on three individuals that keep taking them off as soon as you put them on and lose them. And oh my goodness, it's the most frustrating. You know, just be easy on yourself. And I think the other thing that would have helped me a lot, and that did help me, was really, and this is the thing that the internet does, really find friends. I didn't have friends the way I should have. I think it's easier on people that have some really close either family or friends where they can like drop kids off and go to the store, or, you know, swap out kids and have an afternoon off. And I didn't have that. I never had that. And I think that for the people I see that have that, you know, try and hook up with people that are, you know, that have kids about that same age and swap, because I think that would have helped me a lot. Because I made all my friends, the friends I have now, I made them all on FMH.
Right.
Like all the people that I spend time with. And I have, and I think along with my kids getting older, that's the other thing that made my life so much better, is once I started FMH and I started making these friends, my whole attitude about life got 1,000 times better.
You've actually gone to different cities and met with some of your readers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where have you met readers, in what cities?
Well, just in Salt Lake mostly. I mean, I met some of the people I've met on the blogs in Seattle, because I was there for a weekend. But mostly it's been like in Salt Lake or in Boise. I live in Boise, but I go to Salt Lake quite often because my mom lives there, and also because you know, I've gone down for Sunstone and stuff. And
right.
We've had what we call snackers, blogger snackers, where we've just either met at a restaurant or at somebody's house, and people from the blogs just come and meet us. And I've met a lot of people that way.
Yeah. Your earlier comments about women being easy on themselves reminded me of a small dust up that I have to ask you about. How do you, upon reflection, how did you come out of the whole Julie Beck, what women know, what mothers know, whatever that talk was called? Did you come out feeling okay about that talk, an enlightened view of it? how did you end up feeling about that whole deal?
I just think it was a poor piece of, what do they call it? It was just poorly written, poorly. The idea behind it was okay. You know what I mean? Like,
which is what?
Well, that motherhood is hard, and that you have to work hard at it, and that it's important. And, you know, here's a lot of things that, you know, that might help you become a better mother. But then the way she presented it was, I felt, if you're not doing this and this and this and this and this, you're a bad mother, which I don't think that's what she meant. I think she meant, you know, have a high standard for yourself. And in some ways I agree with that. Like, you know, you need to have some, well, it's kind of hard to say, because, you know, depending on where you are emotionally at that time, survival and not killing your children may be all you can handle. But, you know, you can't always live your life just barely surviving. If you can get to a place where you have a little bit more, you should strive to do a little more. You know, you can't just sit back and, you know, read romance novels all the time and eat bonbons on the couch. You know, and I think that there's a certain truth to that. But when, you know, when women are struggling so much, and so many of them are trying so hard, and then they hear you have to do this, this, and this, and this, you know, it's not really a good way to approach the subject. You know, saying, I know you have a lot of struggles, and I know a lot of these things are hard, but still, you know, have some high standards for yourself, because there are some people that need a poke in the butt. I'm a person that needs a poke in the butt sometimes. But, and you know, that's what our ecclesiastical leaders are for, is to tell us, you know, here's some things you should try to live up to, but, you know, also leave a lot of room in there for you know, for the things that people are going through.
Sure.
I don't know, you know, because I don't know. I just, one of the blessings I think of having gone through some really dark times, I think, is really lacking in being able to judge other people's hard times. You know, like I really have a hard time telling anybody what they should be doing because I went through so, you know, I went through such dark times that I, you know, sometimes I know that all you can do is survive and that's what you can do. But on the other hand, I do feel like sometimes people need to, you know, try a little harder, do a little more, stretch themselves.
That's okay too. How do you deal with two aspects, the narcissism that can be blogging? Just it's all about me and what I write and what people think about what I write. And how do you deal with the nature of sharing so many private things with everyone in the world? It's two questions, but I tend to ask compound questions.
Well, I think with the narcissism thing, I think that there's a certain type of person that blogs and there are people that sort of tend towards liking to talk about themselves. You know, like there are a lot of people who don't, like my husband, for instance.
Right.
But I'm just someone who I think I'm fascinating. But I also, you know, I think maybe this too is maybe an advantage of having been born in the church. I'm also, or having been the youngest child, I'm also fairly regularly convinced that I couldn't possibly be interesting, or that what I have to say couldn't possibly be relevant or important, or, you know, and so. And then I also really have this egalitarian streak where I just really feel like, you know, we should all be equals and we should all, I you know, like, I don't want to sit on a higher chair than someone else or have more time or feel like I did have to sort of accept after a while the fact that I'm in charge of the blog. Because at first we tried really hard not to like, we tried to make it sort of a commune where everybody could come in and say whatever they wanted and act however they wanted. And we would just accept you. But we found out that, you know, people will take advantage of that and people will, take over the conversations and run them in directions that we don't want and, be rude and nasty and evil and troll-like. And so, you know, I really sort of had to accept that, yeah, sometimes there's some people that you really have to kick out and there's sometimes, you know, but, so I guess a part of me really loves talking about myself, but then I also have this other part of me that is, you know, always constantly on the lookout for not being, not putting myself forward too much, not being too, you know, full of myself, not, you know, so it's just kind of a dichotomy in my own nature that I guess I hope I'm constantly overanalyzing my own actions. Did I do that for me or did I do it? You know? And so I hope I keep that balance that way just because I'm just sort of over analytical that way. I don't know.
Sure.
I think I strike a pretty good balance. I've gotten more comfortable. They call me Tyrant at the Tyrant on the blog because I've gotten to the point where I don't even want to have to explain my choices sometimes because it just takes up too much time and space on the blog and it derails the comments. And so, you know, I've just had to just sort of get to the point where I can judge those things and give people a chance if they're worthy of a chance, you know, if they show that they deserve one, and just cut people off at the neck when they don't, because otherwise they control the conversation and the tone, and that's not good either. And then the second part of the question was
the privacy.
Sharing, oh, privacy.
Intimate private things. Like I think I remember you blogged when your father passed away. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you've blogged about, and others have blogged about some pretty private things, death and miscarriages and.
Yeah. And sex and, right. And, you know, and faith crises. I remember the first time I talked about my faith crisis on the blog, I just, when I hit that like published key, I was just sick that I had like all these private thoughts that I'd really only maybe shared with my husband were suddenly like out there for the world to see.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really weird to meet people. I've sort of gotten used to it, but this must be what it's like to be a celebrity, to meet people that know everything about me, that like know how many kids I have, and they know all my family history, and they know my, like all my personal quirks, and I don't know anything about them.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. It is so weird because I'll be like, oh, and this and this and this, and they'll be like, I know, I read that on the blog. I'll be like, oh, that's right. You're not a stranger. You're just a stranger. Yeah, it's so weird. But I have always been a very open person. Like, I've just like naturally, like, you want to know my deepest, darkest secrets? All right, let me tell you. You know, and so I'm just sort of born that way, I think. But then I am married to a very private man. And so that has, and I have learned, I guess, with age too, some wisdom in keeping some things private because not everybody respects, you know, your private thoughts. Most people will, because most people, I think, are sane and nice and want to do the right thing, but there are some people that just really don't care, and or that think that they're doing the right thing and just, I don't know. But so I've had to be pretty careful about what I talk about my husband. I'm constantly weighing, would he want me to say this? Would he, you know, because he is so private. But on the other hand, I sort of feel like in some ways it doesn't apply to him because he doesn't read it and he doesn't know anybody who reads it. but there have been a few times when I've said things about people in his family and it has gotten back to him. Right. And I've gotten in trouble. So I have had to, you know, like kind of cut off. I have to be really careful about some things, but anything that's just my personal baggage, I've just always really been, I've been okay with people knowing it. And I guess I figure that if people misuse it or misread it, that it's their problem, because for the most part, I get, you know, pretty positive feedback when I share personal things. You know, people say it helps them, or, you know, I'm keeping it real. Yeah, I get that at church a lot. Anytime I talk at church, people always say, you just are so real. I don't know how to be any other way, I guess, but I'm just sort of born that way.
Well, it's good. Well, a lot of people appreciate it. I know. Well, why don't we close with your testimony? And, you know, it sounds kind of cheesy. You don't have to give a traditional, you know, whatever. I'm curious if you consider yourself, you know, a one true churcher, or if your testimony views are a little more broad than that. But I guess, you know, I just want to thank you for coming on and maybe have you leave our listeners with your perspectives in terms of spirituality and where your faith resides. I guess there's a lot of people who know the things you know and who have struggled with things, who have fallen out of faith or have lost their faith or have even left the church. And a lot of people might ask you, like maybe they ask me sometimes, which is, how can you stay in the church after all you know and after all you've seen? And so why don't you just share with us, you know, your final thoughts spiritually about the church and your faith and everything else?
Well, you know, like a lot of blogger knackle or liberal Mormons, I sort of divide the church into the church and the gospel. And so I do have faith in some parts of the church, and you know, I don't know. And my ideas of what the gospel is are probably different than a lot of other people's as well. But, as far as the church goes, there are issues, you know, patriarchy and, you know, stuff, and just people stuff, because it's a church of the world. But, I feel like, I see the fruits, I guess, of the church, and I see what the church has done for my family and for the people that I know that really live the gospel. And I know that it makes people happy, and people are just people, and Mormons are just as flawed as anybody else. But I know that it is good for a lot of people. It's a really, really good place for a lot of people to be. As far as the gospel, you know, I have faith in Heavenly Father and Mother who love me, and in a brother that died for me. And I, you know, I feel very strongly about those things. And in, you know, like we talked before about, you know, Mormon concepts of the afterlife and Mormon concepts of family and the importance of those things. Those all are very close to my heart. A lot of the things that are more peripheral, I often don't put a lot of stock in, and I don't necessarily believe or don't believe. I just sort of feel like maybe it's true, maybe it's just part of, you know, the way the church works now. I don't know. I don't think it really matters to me terribly much at this point. As far as, I have very few black and white beliefs about anything. The world is too full of grays. Some things are obviously good and a lot of things are obviously bad, but for the most part, everything's sort of a little bit in between, including people, including myself, including everything. And so, I don't think, as I have met people in the world and talked to people, I don't think that being a member of the church, being Mormon, is necessarily the right thing for everybody right now. I don't think that accepting the gospel necessarily means, that you will, you know, listen to the missionaries and be baptized and die a Mormon who goes to church every week. I don't know what it means exactly for everyone, but I think that, you know, I believe in a God that truly gives everybody an opportunity to grow and to learn, because, you know, our church is all about eternal progression, and we're not all progressing in the same, you know, on the same road at the same time, just towards the same goal. I guess the saying is there are many roads to Oz, right? And so I just, you know, I don't get too worried about what road people are on, as long as they're on a road that's getting them closer to God and to being better people. And I feel like it's going to work out in the end, because, you know, we're all learning and growing, and that's what God wants for us. And I really appreciate the prophets, and I really appreciate the Book of Mormon and the roles that they have played in my life in helping me become a better person. And, you know, I believe that God speaks through them, and that's what I believe.
Beautiful. What do you hope for your children? Do you have hopes for your children, or in terms of, like, if you could leave, let's say your children listen to this a couple of years from now, or 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, what are your fondest hopes and dreams for your children?
Well, I want them to be happy. I look at their different personalities, and I can really see them taking different paths. My oldest is such, she tends to be a black and white thinker. You know, she tends to want, those kinds of answers. So I could see her, you know, really clinging to the church and really being a true blue member in a way that I'm not. But then again, you know, people change, and who knows what will happen. And my youngest is a little devil. I mean, I love him, but he loves to rebel, and he loves being naughty. And, you know, I feel like I have to allow that in healthy ways, you know, direct it in healthy ways. And I can see him having a much more difficult time in a sort of black and white environment of the church, because he's, you know, you tell him to go up and he wants to go down. And that's not really what people who thrive in the church. But, you know, again, who knows? And then my middle daughter, she is really easygoing. You know, she just likes to enjoy life and take things as they come. And I can see her just sort of, you know, being sort of mellow about whatever she chooses. And as far as them, you know, I would love to see them stay in the church, and I would love to see them go on missions. And I, you know, I don't know if I'd necessarily want to see them go to BYU, but if that's what they wanted and that made them happy, then I'd be happy with that too. But I also, you know, I worry about the effect that, you know, patriarchy might have on their lives. You know, like I worry about my son as well, that, you know, that it could make him entitled in some way, make him feel like he deserves to be in charge. He loves to be in charge. Oh my goodness, that boy loves any excuse to be in charge. And, you know, I can just see him clinging to the idea that he is supposed to be in charge. And, you know, again, people change, so who knows what it'll be like. But, you know, I could see that being a corrupting influence, and that sort of breaks my heart. And, you know, those sorts of things. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to choose, and I don't know how I feel about it even. I know that the pressure from my own mother is intense. It's insane. You know, I had a conversation with her the last time we were together. It was really painful. And I was saying, you know, I don't like it when you give me updates about my siblings and whether they're wearing their garments or going to church or not. You know, like, I don't feel like I feel like you're constantly judging whether you are righteousness, you know, because you're constantly and she's like, but I just want you to be happy. I'm like, but you want us to be happy the way you think we'll be happy. You don't really want us to be happy for the way that we are really happy, that we might really be happy. And she's like, but I know how you'll be happy. I know the way to make you happy. I know what will make you happy. And so I guess, you know, I guess we all try and correct the mistakes that our mothers made and then make our own mistakes. But I hope I don't try and force my children into the happiness that I think that they should have. That I just kind of let them have the happiness, find the happiness that will really make them happy.
Right. It's always a risk of parenting to overcorrect, isn't it?
Oh my goodness. Well, and you know, I might not make that mistake, but I'll make some other horrible mistake.
Yep. Well, we can't end by having you defined by your children. So what dreams and hopes do you have for you post motherhood?
Oh no. Do I really have to think about this?
No, you don't. You don't have to.
Okay, let's see. What do I want? You know, my son is going to be in first grade next year, and I want a job. And really, when I think about it, I really, really, really want to be a writer. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Everybody really wants to be a writer. Sure. You know, everybody is writing a book. Everybody is writing a book. So it's sort of, you know, like a part of me says, yeah, but you have a really popular blog. So you sort of have one foot in the door. Plus it kind of proves that you already can write. But, you know, I would really like to do, and here's the other thing. I think I would really be good at some sort of like journalism or, you know, that sort of thing. But, that whole industry has just collapsed. And so, you know, that's not really an option. Even people have been doing it for 20 years can't get a job. So sort of my aspirations for myself are really unrealistic. And so I sort of think I should get a realistic aspiration, but maybe I should just go with the unrealistic ones for a while, see if I can make them work. And then if I can't, I should fall back onto something more realistic.
You should totally write a book.
Yes. I would love to write books, some sort of humor maybe. Be the like the Irma Bombeck of Mormon women, something.
You gotta write the Mormon mommy memoir.
Yeah, that's the one that will make people laugh and make me really rich. See, I don't want to just be like moderately successful. I want to be really, really successful. I don't want to buy a big house or a yacht or anything. I just don't want to worry about money anymore. I hate worrying about money.
Sure.
And we worry about money a lot.
So blogging hasn't made you rich, huh?
Oh my goodness. You know, and that's the other thing, all these liberal ideals. You know, we can't put ads on our blog. And I truly believe this because I really like get kind of sickened by the idea of like priestcraft and profiting off of, you know, selling spirituality. You know, like I really would feel intensely uncomfortable with that. So, you know, I actually pay to blog because I'm so, you know, I make no money.
You guys used to take donations. Did you stop?
No, we took donations, and what happened is we had to get a different server because we kept crashing the other server. And the server we're on right now is insanely expensive. But being very flaky, remember how right at the beginning I was talking about how flaky I am?
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that I need to search for a different server that isn't so insanely expensive. And I know they're out there, but I just like I pay it. I pay, it's a monthly charge, right? So I pay that month and then I immediately forget that I should be searching for another server. And then the next month the bill comes and I pay it and then I immediately forget that I need to be searching for another server.
Oh.
Because most servers cost like about $100 a month and
Yeah.
I'm, or $100 a year, right? For a
Right.
blog.
Yeah.
And I'm paying about three times that. I'm paying $30 a month, which is ridiculous. So I am actually going. I'm paying a lot. And yeah, I should probably ask for some donations, but a part of me thinks it's just because you're stupid and not following through that you're in this position. So why should you ask for people to pay for your stupidity? So
Well, hang
if
in
anybody
there.
listening out there wants to help me find a new server, you're welcome
I
to do
might
so.
be, I'll talk to you after. I might be able to help you.
All right.
Well, Lisa Butterworth, thank you so much for coming on Mormon Stories. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to have you tell your story here.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. I've been wanting to do this forever. I feel like you do such a good job, but yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
You too.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, Skye, pixton.com. Thank you. The sun gone down, darkness be over me, my high rest a stone. Yet in my dreams I'd be nearer my God to thee, nearer my God to thee, nearer to thee. Steps unto heaven, all that thou sendest me in mercy give. Angels to beckon me nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee. Then with my bright with thy praise, out of my stony griefs, Bethel I'll raise. So by my woes to be nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer.
leaving.